How you doing, everybody? Episode number 42 of your threesome podcast with your host, me, Lex, her, Stacy.
Me.
You.
Me.
So, last episode, we talked about a part in history that probably will never happen again just due to the circumstances. But we already have another election coming up, and everybody's lining up for another freak show.
And it's going to be Ted Cruz and all the Canadian birthers.
Yeah. I saw your Ted Cruz butt plug you posted on the Threesome Podcast Facebook page. Nice going.
That was a request from a listener.
Yeah, listen.
Who wanted to see it.
Listen, anybody who has a butt plug made after them when they've just announced is a dangerous candidate. Somebody that we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Someone who's not afraid to go to very dark, dank places to get the job done.
Yeah, and listen, I like candidates like that if it's the right person. I'm probably one of the few people that admits that there's been a couple times over the last 35, 40 years that we needed a little Richard Nixon
a little
attitude.
Dick.
Yeah, a little dick attitude. You know, to handle some business worldwide. But he's gone. He gone. So we are left with, who do we have here? Rand Paul, right? Ted Cruz. Marco Rubio, is he declared yet?
No idea.
Yeah, I think he's close. Is Jeb declared yet?
No idea. I know that he's everywhere. If he hasn't yet, he's going to soon, yeah, because he's positioning himself to do so.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary took so damn long to declare. When Bill Maher said, yeah, she finally, I was like, God, I thought she did that 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, yeah, and then you got Bernie Sanders, who I love. He has no chance in hell of making it past Hillary, I don't think. But what a great public servant this guy is. He gives a shit. He cares. He's just been a wonderful public servant. I don't know. I think he's too good of a person to be president, if that means anything.
I think some, neurosurgeon from Detroit.
Right.
Announced himself. I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah. There's some no chance in hell people that have declared. Although I thought Bill Clinton had no chance in hell when he ran, so who am I to say?
He was young. He has charisma. We've talked about that before. You know, famous people, you meet them and they fill a room like with that it factor, that feeling, that aura. Bill Clinton had that.
Yes. He was Kennedy-esque. He's the closest thing to Kennedy the Democrats have offered up.
Except for an actual Kennedy. All of the offspring and lesser Kennedys.
But he was like him in a lot of ways, even down to sex in the Oval Office with other people.
Somebody, interesting tidbit. I read once upon a time that Kennedy, it was a book about important, like, country decisions, you know, political decisions that were made when the person who most of the time was the president was naked. And apparently Kennedy liked being naked
all the time.
It was not uncommon. He would sit at his desk in the Oval Office buck naked. All of his aides and cabinet members and secretaries just had to deal with it.
Yeah.
He made the Bay of Pigs decision naked.
Hey, so what? They all have their eccentricities.
Yes.
It's just, I mean, I almost don't want somebody who's not like that to have the job.
You know, at this point, I don't want a president who hasn't smoked pot once in college. Because if you haven't tried pot once in college or in high school, I feel that you don't have worldly enough sense of the world to be able to make decisions for a large group of people who might be vastly different than you.
I don't want a homeschooled kid to be president.
Oh, my God, no.
Because you may be educated better than your friends were, if you have any. but you're a social piece of shit. You're going to sit across the table from, the big leaders of the world. When you're afraid to ask a girl out.
I hate keep going back to Bush, but you know, he would sit there at state dinners and chew with his mouth open.
Yeah.
And he came from money and people that could tell him, this isn't how you act, you know?
Yeah, I just prefer to have somebody in office that is in control. I don't even care if they're a little bit of a control freak. I think it's necessary almost to have that job. You know, to not get pushed around, to not get manipulated. You know, you are the president, and it's pretty much we're counting on you to take in the data from all the geniuses that you have access to and make very sensible, direct decisions.
Also, and you know, not that I would want this person we're formulating, I wouldn't want them to do it on a whim, but you have to have someone who is not afraid to look at like a Dick Cheney, for instance, and tear him a new asshole.
Right.
If you can't turn around to someone who I imagine is as intimidating of a person as Dick Cheney, I'm using him as an example, and turn around and say, you need to shut the fuck up right now and walk out of my office. You know, I am the, you know, if you're afraid to say shit like that to someone, you should not be running for president.
Oh, I'd be a great president then.
You would.
Yeah, I need just a couple of things out of my president. That very variable you just brought up, so level-headed that you look at the people that are in the room that are smarter than you, which all of them are because they're all experts in a certain field that you have access to when you're doing decision making. You have to be able to know your place as far as somebody giving you data and giving you answers to something you never would come up with on your own and process that into a decision. I need that person. I need that person who's like, no, we're doing it my way or the highway. I need the person that says, you know, I'm going to make the decision. I need all of you to tell me why I'm making it.
But still have that person once given all the data and all the data is pointing in one direction, but one out of every 250 times, they just have this gut feeling they need to go another direction. And it's that one time that it worked and it was right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think all the great ones have had to do at some point.
Right.
I want somebody right or wrong that doesn't bend because something political is gonna wreck it or make them look bad, that actually does what's best for the situation.
Yes.
Which I think is an area of strength for Obama. You know, that whole Iran deal situation with Netanyahu coming over here and all that, there's so many ways he could have handled that. I like the fact he just didn't handle it. He just
There was no dick swinging.
No. It was like, after all that, you ended up looking like douchebags and nothing changed. And all it really did, if I'm him, I think in my mind, I now have a get out of jail free card with Netanyahu, because anything he wants that that I don't want him to have, I have that to shove up his ass forever. Because it was disrespectful.
Yes.
He always has that card to play. It's like, oh, you need something out of me now? Yeah. Yeah.
Someone like, who knows how to play the game, mm-hmm. but doesn't let the game control everything.
Right. It's and they're out there. We just don't know who they are. Only they know who they are. And we just have to hope they run. And can get by the Koch brothers' money and the Pelosi's and Harry Reid's of the world that want to tell them this is how it's going to be. Who lead by fear. You know, it's like, oh, if we do this, you know, we're going to upset the Republicans. Yeah, so.
That's what it is. So much of politics, it just seems now, is everyone poking each other.
It's speculative, it's speculative chess playing is what it is. That has nothing to do with issues.
Yes. Meanwhile, you know, hello, we are citizens and we'd like, you know, new roads in Michigan, and Detroit would like, you know, some water for the people that can't afford it. And, you know, there's just stuff going on over here. Our mm-hmm. infrastructure is crumbling. But hey, you guys keep playing your little game.
Yeah, it's so true that at some point, we're going to have to take time out for 4 or 8 years and work on just us. I know that's easier said than done.
I know. You know, people talk about we should just pull all of our troops out of everywhere and close down all bases everywhere. And, you know, that sounds great, but it can't happen. But yes, I would love for us to just, you know, instead of giving billions of dollars to some other country to rebuild something, how about we rebuild ourselves?
Why not use our military people in times of non-conflict to build infrastructure, to use their expertise to, I mean, these people build bases and roads and everything else in seconds when they go into an area.
Because capitalism, you have to be able to give those, you know, let companies bid and blah, blah, blah. I agree. But, you know, again, they wouldn't let that happen because you have to be able to let American citizens work and bid for jobs.
Well, they don't have to completely use the military, but they certainly could use the aspects of it that do those things, you know, that build our bases and do our engineering. You know, Army Corps of Engineers and so on and so forth to spearhead those projects and also keep money flowing into the military base while it just, you know, all you're doing instead of, you know, bombing somebody or planning raids or trying to take something over that you're probably going to give back in 8 years. Why not just have them build in very quick fashion new infrastructure?
That would be wonderful, because, and I'm sure it's like this other places, but, you know, with Michigan, with our winters, our roads disintegrate quickly.
Yeah.
You know, with the freezing and the thawing and everything. And any road project, it seems to take about 2 years. It's like, you know, I just want to be able to drive down I-75 for 6 miles without having to change lanes and slow down mm-hmm. because of the orange barrels. You know, please,
yeah.
Could I just do this? It would be nice.
I know. But we've always been, and most countries are, countries out of necessity. So when the infrastructure gets to the point of critical, that's when it'll get dealt with. It's just the way things work.
I guess,
work.
You know, from what we've been hearing for at least 10 years, though, now, it seems the infrastructure is pretty critical. You know, I remember back when they sunsetted Windows XP and talking about, you know, all of the, you know, you talk about our power grid that's like maxed out and how many power companies were still running their things on Windows XP and because they couldn't afford to upgrade to new Windows on all of the computers they had, how easy it would be now for, you know, foreign countries with their hackers to start getting into and, you know, be able to take the East Coast out for a day or two.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary that Windows XP really exposed all this.
I know, but do realize that it's, you know, big computer companies that want those contracts that kind of put that stuff out there. You know, I have friends that work in upper echelon in one of our grids, and he's like, yeah, while updating is needed, whoever put it out there that it was like, you know, a child's PC that's running our whole grid is a little overblown.
Now, I know here where I live in the Thumb of Michigan, our power company, which is a cooperative, so all customers own a part of it, they had sent out a letter back, I don't know, maybe even a year ago, maybe it was last summer, I don't know, but basically saying that because of some coal plants having to shut down and different things, basically in 2016, there is a positive, I mean, they are really sweating right now, allegedly, about us having enough power. I know that there's wind turbines and solar panels going up everywhere, you know, and I'd like to know what the truth is, if it's a scare tactic or if really we are going to be, you know, not allowed to have power after 10 o'clock at night or something. You know what I mean?
They call them power companies for a reason. They dictate all their own PR and their own brightness and their own darkness as far as, you know, where they want to position things. If stuff like that's being said, usually it's not true.
I hope not.
It's a fraction of truth that they escalate for their own means. Lisa was telling me that she used to hear that stuff in Oklahoma in the summers. You know, that there's going to be threats of all the, you know, grids being shut down at certain times and brownouts and things like that. Well, you know, T. Boone Pickens puts up a couple thousand wind-generated windmills. You know, the big giant ones that you can see.
Oh, yeah, we've got farms all over.
Yeah, you can see them all through the countryside. It's actually really cool, I think.
I know. I love them.
I can just sit there. I just want to lay under one and hear it go. Yeah, I mean, it's just,
or the big. It's because the fins are so big. You can hear the.
Yeah.
And as each one goes by, and it's like, ooh, that's a lot of wind.
Yeah, I was driving up the 35, and there was a double semi that had this really weird looking thing on it. I'm like, I mean, it was long and I it didn't dawn on me. It was just one of those blades.
I know. They're like 150 feet long.
Yeah.
We would have them drive through town here and, you know, traffic would stop because, I mean, they really had to maneuver to get them where they had to go because they're freaking huge.
But the amount of power these things generate are no joke. I mean, they really take a big, big, big strain off the grid.
And then you get people bitching about, you know, oh, they're ugly, they're ruining the landscape and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, are you kidding me? 100 years ago, there weren't power lines everywhere. So I imagine 100 years ago, there were people going, oh, these wires hanging over the road, they're detracting from our appearance and our view and blah, blah, blah. It's called progress, folks. Get over it.
But the point I'm trying to make is, since T. Boone Pickens, who is an oil man, was involved in that, and of course had a stake in both sides, the thing of brownouts being in the conversation just disappeared. Just gone. Because it just kind of dawned on me. It's like the scare tactic of brownouts probably was him.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
You know, give me that windmill contract. I'll take care of this. Because they probably didn't want to give him any more land or any more subsidizing to build nuclear or refineries or anything like that. But we'll help you all day long build something like this. We'll give you all the land you need.
Well, actually, with those, what at least here, maybe I don't know if it's different there, they go to the farmers. I mean, these are being put out in fields. They actually rent like a that small part. But, so, I mean, a farmer will say, sure, you know,
but they're government subsidized to pay the farmer. It's not just, you know, T. Boone Pickens taking his wallet out. It's a carefully orchestrated plan between the power company and you know, government to reward farmers or whoever owns the land to let them put that on there. There's a lot of PR work that goes into that because
yes,
you know, it's still people having access to your land to go out there and maintenance them, and you know, there's just a lot.
Yeah, you have to build that driveway. I mean, so there's an area that the farmer can't drive across, you know, with his plows and stuff.
Yeah.
So they have to have the driveway that goes out there, and then there's however much space around it in case it tips over or whatever. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there's all that. And, you know, you definitely need several parties and a well-orchestrated plan to go in and tell somebody with generally a very conservative thought in their mind about farming and simplicity and everything, how this is going to benefit them.
Yes.
As well as everybody else. I don't know what they get paid to have those on there, but I marvel at them. I think they're amazing, and I think it'd be so easy to put them everywhere, and eventually they just become back in the landscape. They become part of the landscape. You could even like make them look cooler if you wanted to.
We have a couple hundred here around where I live. And, you know, you get the people who live next door to one that talk about the noise. I stop frequently. You know, I will get out and stop so I can hear and look at them if there's no traffic and stuff. And I have heard exactly one that squeaked. As I said, the only other sound I've ever heard from any of them was the as the blades went by, the whooshing of the air. But I've only heard one squeak, and nobody lived near it.
It's much less noise pollution than even the ocean is.
Very true. That is a good, you're right.
I mean, if you are somebody that isn't used to noise and you go like stay at a beach house somewhere or something, the decibel level of a decent sized surf is very disturbing and loud if you're trying to go to sleep.
That is a very good example.
So something going would be the same or less to me. It's just something you get used to. And, you know, if it squeaks, you have the person's phone number that manages it, I would imagine. Call them and get them to fix it.
Yep.
They probably don't want it to squeak. They just can't pay somebody to stand under it 24/7 to make sure it's operating.
Oh, it's squeaking.
Yeah.
Get the oil.
What's your job? I'm a squeak analyzer.
The squeaker.
But they're totally fascinating to me. It's kind of funny to talk to Lisa and her friends about it because, you know, they're all in the oil industry up there. You know, it's a big part of the economy. So she's kind of like, you know, I don't like them. All they do is cost my, you know, friends jobs. And I'm like, yeah, but if you take your friends out of the equation, there's some other people getting a lot of jobs out of this.
I had a friend who made a lot of money. He was called in and was part of the crews putting it up. You know, I mean, there are always jobs somewhere else if you know how to look and you're qualified for it, I guess. Yeah. I don't want to say it like that because that sounds really unempathetic, but someone has to build them. Someone has to maintain them.
Well, in the name, in the name of progress, it's something that has to be done, and it is something that has to be maintained and built. So it is providing jobs.
Plus, I read somewhere they really don't have a long life because these are new. You know that the technology is still pretty much in its infancy, you know, where we're finally mass putting these up. And I think I read that they figure that they might have a life of about 5 years. If you can get 10 years out of them, you're, I guess, going way beyond expectations. So it sounds like there will be continuous fixing and replacing and stuff.
Oh, and I'm sure they'll come up with lighter blades or, you know, some sort of material that's even lighter and more durable that, right, you know, makes them more efficient. I mean, it's going to be a work in progress. But
there's even a school up farther north of where I live towards the tip of the thumb. They have a smaller windmill right on the school grounds that helps power part of the school. I mean, so that is money that the taxpayers aren't paying to power the school because the wind's doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They got some sort of little grant or something to put the windmill up, and there you go.
Yeah, I wanted to put one up in my backyard, a residential version, and the homeowners association wouldn't let people do it. There were 25 of us that wanted to put one in our yards, and what it does, if you put solar panels in that, it pretty much takes care of 66% of your electricity in your house.
I know. If I had the money, I would be doing it. And I actually still look and think, you know, if I could do it in increments, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, if you've got a little yard, put some freaking solar panels there. Well, you know, they've got it now where they're turning shingles, your roof shingles, into solar panels,
yeah,
that will, you know, both be shingles, but then also can be absorbing energy.
There's all kinds of programs, by the way, if you want to look into them, for both of those things, where the government will pay for a portion of it, a pretty good sized portion too, like 25 or 30%, or they will let you write it off your taxes.
Nice. We'll look into that. Because, yeah, I would have no issue. And, you know, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, my God, the solar panels are going to be ugly and they're going to ruin my yard and people are going to drive by and think those terrible people put solar panels up, you know? Fuck yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, they have there's a housing community in Arizona where they built the whole community with solar roofs. And you have no idea unless you see it from the air.
Nice.
You know, they have like these shrouds that kind of look like terracotta shrouds that pretty much hide most of them. Because it's Arizona and it's kind of ranch style, most of the houses are flat on the roof.
Right.
You know, and, you know, they have this decorative terracotta, you know, very expensive looking shielding, you know, from the ground. And the only way you can really see what's going on is from above. The houses are pretty expensive, but most of these heat their pool, heat and chill their houses, and their electric bills are like under $100. And in some cases,
right,
give back to the grid. You know, they actually get a check for providing more electricity back to the grid than they're using.
And it drives me nuts when you get these dumbasses going, well, you know, the sun doesn't shine all the time. It's not windy all the time. What are you going to do then?
That's
right. And it's like, you know what? But think of what you've just saved when it was windy and sunny that day.
Yeah, then...
You can't look at, oh my God, the sun's not going to shine 24/7.
I don't know why everything has to be either or. You know what I mean? It's, yeah. It's like when it comes to energy, it's always like either coal, oil, or the sun or wind. What's it going to be? It's like, why can't it be all of them?
Yeah.
Depending on geographic location, why can't it be all of them? You know, one
with a game plan eventually to wean ourselves off the oil. And the coal is just bad for our lungs.
Yeah, well, I mean,
a lot of
these things need oil to run. You know, oil still has to be refined and used. You know, it's always going to be some sort of synthetic lubrication or real lubrication is going to be needed for machinery.
But there will be a time when the dinosaur bones that the devil put in the earth to confuse the faithful, they're going to run out and we're not going to have any more oil.
Right. And
and at that time, I guess we'll have to figure out some other way to lubricate.
Yeah, and I'm sure all those things are being researched and looked at and everything else. You know, it's also up against the economic power of oil companies and, you know, the fact that they will convince us there's plenty of oil for the next, you know, 500 years.
Yes. And now we have fracking. Do you think fracking is causing earthquakes?
Yes.
I tend to agree. I'm not 100% like, yeah, that's what's happening, but I have to think that there's more earthquakes taking place across the globe now than there ever has been.
Well, I mean, and it's where they're taking place. You know, Texas and Oklahoma used to have an earthquake a decade, you know, of only seismographic sensibility could pick up. Now, I've felt a couple of them.
Michigan had one just a couple days ago down in southern Michigan.
And you know, there's seismologists on TV talking about the two most dangerous fault lines in America, which happen to be California, you know, San Andreas as usual, and the one that goes right up through Texas and Oklahoma, where guess what's been happening the most?
Huh. Kerplooey.
Yeah. So, yeah, fracking is, I mean, it's providing a energy source in natural gas, which is amazing. But the consequences are, you know, very dangerous as far as our water tables and things like that. And of course, the sheer economic just thrashing that.
Yes.
You know, is going to take place at some point.
Well, since we're on a roll.
I didn't mean economic. I meant ecological. I'm sorry.
What do you think about California's drought and how everyone's going to be out of water next year sometime?
Yeah, and that somebody's probably going to be Colorado. But, or some poor place that has, you know, utopia going on where a giant pipe is going to come in and suck all their water out from under. Because we need California.
Yeah.
I'm sure at some point it's going to be the top issue we're dealing with on the news and on the web and everything else, because it's really a bad situation. My sister lives there. I had dinner with her last night, and she says it's everybody is being much more conscious with their water use than ever before. It's on the 6 o'clock news every night. You see it on billboards. You know, the message is being delivered that we're on the verge of total fuckism here.
There are those who believe the next big world war will be fought over water. Not oil, not land, but water.
Yeah. That's possible.
And I can say, hey, people who don't know how to manage your water, keep your grubby mitts off the Great Lakes. So there.
Why? So you can use it?
Actually, Michigan and then all of the states that border a Great Lake and then Canada have actually, they have an agreement. There's like a treaty that was signed stating that no one's going to be pumping water out to other places that are drought ridden.
Nope. You're just going to, California's going to build a 2,500 mile long pipe and suck your water right out. Right into
a big straw. Yeah. It's going to have the little red stripes
on
it.
That's right. You're going to see it pop up. It's probably going to have a little Disney mouse on it or something.
A spoon at the end.
Fuck you, Stacy. So, all right. Well, we have to get out of here. Very serious nature this podcast was, but that's the way it goes sometimes. We talk about what we talk about.
We shall call it the environmental disaster podcast
we
episode.
Will. So sorry you didn't get fucked on the bridge of the Enterprise this time, Stacy, but that'll be, I'm sure that'll come back into play at some point.
My nipples are so sad.
Yeah. Yes. Your
yes.
Dilithium nipples.
Now do Mr. Sulu.
Captain, the state of Stacy's nipples. Or something that have to be discussed. Shut up, Spock! All you talk about Stacy's nipples, and we're dying over here. Easy bones. Spock's just trying to help. Precisely, Captain. I don't need Dr. McCoy's illogical behavior right now. When it comes to Stacy's nipples, my tricorder says that they're quite active right now.
Yes.
Sulu, what do you think about Stacy's nipples? Yes, Captain.
I love you.
Captain, we have the Klingons on the screen. They want to weigh in on Stacy's nipples. On screen, Spock. Nipples. I'll get back to you. Nipples on stun, Mr. Spock. Okay, there you go.
Thank you.
I know you like that.
I am spent.
Yeah, maybe next time you'll get fucked by Star Wars. You will feel the power.
Okay, stop. When I was a little kid,
power.
Darth Vader was the biggest, scariest bad guy ever. I lived a good portion of my younger life thinking that he was just the worst.
He's my favorite. It's like, we had a deal, Vader. I have altered the deal. Like, means nothing. Yes, I've altered
the
deal. He
does the force choke.
Yeah.
You can hear the crunching and popping of cartilage and bones.
Yeah. Apology accepted, Captain. He's the best.
ThreesomePodcast.com.